From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, experts wonder how Governor Cuomo will pay for his estimated $100 billion infrastructure plan. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts about former gubernatorial candidate Zephyr Teachout considering a run for Congress. And we take you to a Martin Luther King Jr. remembrance in Newburgh. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo has been touting a massive infrastructure plan for New York, but budget experts say much of the funding for the project, estimated to cost $100 billion, remain unresolved, even with the release of Cuomo's new budget plan. They also question what they say is a cost shift from the state to New York City. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo has been so focused on a massive state infrastructure upgrade that even the slogan for the governor's 2016 agenda is called Built to Lead.
It's a development initiative that would make Governor Rockefeller jealous.
But his budget proposal does not clearly outline how he will pay for everything from adding a third track to the Long Island Railroad, revamping Penn Station, and spending $22 billion on road and bridge repairs upstate.
You do have to take this capital plan with a grain of salt,
says E.J. McMahon with the fiscally conservative Empire Center.
This $100 billion package isn't, I don't think, will ever add up to actually $100 billion worth of development. And a lot of it, what does happen, will happen in a different way and on a different schedule than the governor may have implied.
A large portion of the money, including for upgrades of the JFK and LaGuardia airports and Penn Station, will come from private money and from capital funds from the Port Authority, which the legislature does not have to sign off on. A new tunnel under the Hudson to connect New York and New Jersey transit would be funded by the federal government, according to Cuomo's budget figures. And though the governor has pledged $8.3 billion to the MTA's mass transit plan, only $1 billion is actually appropriated in the new state budget. The rest of the state's promised share might have to be borrowed through the authority. Tammy Gammerman with the budget watchdog group Citizens Budget Commission has also analyzed the budget plans.
Most of the money for these projects is not contained within the state budget.
And she says the spending plan leaves many unanswered questions. But she says the $22 billion for fixing upstate roads and bridges does seem to be in the budget.
The only money that's really in the state budget right now is for projects that go through the state's Department of Transportation. And there is more money in there for roads and bridges. There's additional money for housing and for water infrastructure.
Governor Cuomo also pledged to rein in spending for the sixth year in a row.
I will submit a $145 billion budget that spends an additional 1.7%, less than our 2% spending limit.
But those spending restrictions seem to come at the expense of New York City, where the governor has had a long-running feud with its mayor, Bill de Blasio. Cuomo wants to reverse a policy where the state pays for increased Medicaid costs, which go up every year, and give those cost increases back to the city to pay for. He also proposes increasing the city's share to pay for the City University of New York's budget. Those changes could cost the city $1 billion. The left-leaning Working Families Party, which has had its own battles with Cuomo, calls the cuts drastic, and Mayor de Blasio has vowed to fight them. Gammerman says analysts at Citizens Budget Commission were also shocked when they saw the details.
It's an unfunded mandate on New York City.
McMahon with the Empire Center says the cuts can't be explained any other way than as part of a political fight.
It really does seem to be like kicking sand in his face.
The proposed cuts have generated many negative news stories, and Governor Cuomo made two impromptu appearances on public radio and the cable news channel New York One to defend them.
They want to look at what they call cuts towards New York City, and frankly, they don't want to look at the positive.
The governor says the spending reductions are aimed at streamlining what he calls the bureaucracy at the health departments and university systems. And he says the cuts will be offset from all of the infrastructure projects he's planned, as well as a $20 billion plan to house the homeless. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, you had a vast, wide-ranging discussion this week with Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. And, of course, it had a lot to do with a press conference he held this week and he and other groups getting together on what the governor should do in terms of implementing ethics reform.
I love Blair Horner, always have. He is, if there's anything like a hero in Albany, he's the head of NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group. We know that NYPIRG was not all that effective before he got there, but he is the good government lobbyist in Albany, and he has immense respect from everybody. Well, anyway, we had him on our show, The Capital Connection, this week. He pointed something out that I thought was just fascinating, and that had to do with the governor's call for LLC loophole reform. Now, I love this story because it is a story in unmitigated chutzpah on the part of the governor. He says LLCs, which allow you to take basically as much money from people as you want, should not be there, says the governor, and we're going to plug that hole. Then we come to find out that he's taken immense amounts of money himself that way. And he said, oh, won't the other guys do it? I'll do it. Not good enough, in my opinion. But in any case, that's what he says. And then we'll see whether he really means it or not. Another story, which involves the governor, is his call for changing the way in which newspapers and others can file Freedom of Information requests. And it takes too long and the rest of it. But that's only he wants it for the legislature. No, Governor. We want it for everybody. Blair Horner says, let everybody respond to it. I've talked to our colleagues at the Albany Times Union, which have regularly asked state agencies working for the governor for information and seen year-long delays. They've had to sue to get the information. So wait a second now. How can you call for reform if your own agencies aren't complying with the existing law?
We honor Martin Luther King Jr. this week on Monday, and the governor was speaking at a church touting his proposals for prison reform and a higher minimum wage.
Well, this is the governor who has recognized at this stage in his governorship that he has to move to the left, and he has done that, and what he's calling for, to me, makes great sense. One is, you know, the idea that everybody deserves at least a fighting chance at a living wage, $15 an hour. It'll take years to get there. We know that. But he's calling for it, and he's getting lots of positive feedback for doing that. He's also calling for a properly funded education program. But since the localities are the place that education is funded from, and since they have a cap on how much tax a county or a city can charge, it's very hard to get the money you need. So one has to turn the page and look behind it to try to get a feeling as to whether this is real or not.
Perhaps one of the areas the governor has tried to suggest moving forward on is climate change. He says no matter what you call it, 100-year storms are happening every 2 years, and we need to do something. To that end, in the State of the State address, he touted a massive infrastructure plan. Alan, our Karen DeWitt, has been reporting on it, and the estimated cost, $100 billion. The question, how are you going to fund it?
Well, that's right. He seems to be saying that if you put up, for example, the Javits Center or redo the post office in New York, that he can find people who will pay to have it done so that the government won't have to do it. I say good luck, Charlie, number one. But if you spend $100 billion, one way or another, you're going to have to pay for it, as you point out. And what we're talking about here is vigorous. In other words, you borrow it, like you borrow money for your mortgage on your house. Somebody's got to pay it, and it's going to take a long time to pay off $100 billion or any part of it. And that's the way it is. You know, there's always interest on the loan.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has set a two-year goal for a long-awaited restoration in school funding, but school districts and several lawmakers say they can't wait any longer. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard explains.
Reacting to Governor Andrew Cuomo's State of the State message earlier this month, Democratic Assemblywoman Kerry Warner of Washington and Saratoga counties said she was encouraged by the governor's promises for education funding, but she did take particular issue with one aspect of the plan.
I was very encouraged by the tone of the conversation about education and restoration of the gap elimination adjustment monies. I'm going to be looking to see it done in 1 year, not two.
The gap elimination adjustment, begun at the height of the recession in 2010, was intended to help fill the state budget gap. Now that the economy is improving, efforts have intensified to eliminate the cuts, which advocates claim hurts smaller districts disproportionately, since many larger districts are not as reliant on state aid. Over the past few years, a majority of the GEA cuts have been restored. One of the first moves by the GOP-led state Senate in the new session was to pass a bill calling for an end to the GEA. The Senate has taken a position to not pass a budget unless GEA funding is restored. The small Greenwich Central School District in Washington County, attended by about 1,000 students, is displaying its advocacy goals for the new year on its website, topping the list, the restoration of GEA funds. The district says it has lost nearly $6 million in promised state aid since the 2009-2010 school year. The district has cut 10% of its staff, leading to larger class sizes, reductions in programs, and longer bus runs. Last year, school superintendent Mark Fish stood next to Warner to push for her bill to eliminate the GEA.
You know, we're very proud of what we do here, and we don't want to start taking those opportunities away from kids. We, you know, AP classes, college credit. It's important that our kids had the opportunity to compete here in upstate New York.
Democratic Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara, who represents many smaller districts in Schenectady and Montgomery County, says the call from districts will become louder as the session plays out.
So you will hear from schools across the state saying that this is something we're not happy with. We haven't been happy with it, and now we're saying another 2 years. This is something that's unacceptable, and we want to see it end right now because it should have ended a long time ago.
Santa Barbara said he thinks the chances of passing the bill to restore the GEA funding is gaining traction in the assembly.
The whole idea of taking money from schools and using it for another purpose is something I don't agree with, and I think other members feel the same way.
Meanwhile, advocates for charter schools are also calling for an increase in aid. In his budget address, Cuomo also called for transforming low-performing schools to so-called community schools with more services available to students with special needs. He seeks to increase school funding by $1 billion.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
A year ago, President Obama announced the My Brother's Keeper initiative, a program that he said was designed to help every boy and young man of color who is willing to do the hard work to get ahead. The president invited communities across the country to join the effort. Dave Lucas reports the Capitol, Albany, accepted the president's challenge and has made great strides.
Albany's program is set up to avail teens of color with employment opportunities, ensuring they'll have a better future. The target objective is to lessen incidents of violence in the community. Mayor Kathy Sheehan says despite fiscal challenges faced by the city, the program will have an overseer.
I made it a mandate that we find the funds so that we can have a person who is helping to guide us and lead us and manage us through this effort. Because notwithstanding the great intentions of the people in this room and all of those who stood up, you all have day jobs. You all have other things that you're working on. And so how can we make sure that we're keeping that work on track? We have to be willing to fund that resource and to say it matters. And so we've done that, and we are so thrilled to have Pedro, who is here, who is helping to lead this effort. And I think that that is the message that we also need to send, that this is a commitment that we are going to figure out how we can deliver on, because these young people matter.
She and they're referring to Pedro Perez, the executive director of Albany's My Brothers and Sisters Keeper.
There's an African proverb that has been used many, many times, but it is not untrue. It remains true. In some circles, it's called collective impact. We know it as it takes a village to raise our children. All of us together must pool our resources, must unite and sing from the same hymn book. And my job is to help us come together and sing a glorious song so that can redirect the pipeline from failure and incarceration to success and prosperity.
City School District of Albany Superintendent Marguerite Vanden Weingard says the education of black and brown youth is the linchpin to the continued leadership of the United States in this global economy.
It's taken a year of incredible work by dedicated people in order to create a framework for us to come together in order to change students' lives and children's lives. Of course, I had to smile a little bit as if this city had an option, as the top civil rights activist Barbara Smith grabbed hold of President Obama's My Brother's Keeper and started running through the city with it instantaneously upon receipt. So it's not like we have much choice, because Ms. Smith was going to make sure that we did right by our boys and girls.
About a third of Albany's residents are black, and 18% are under 18 years of age, according to census numbers. Community activist Marie Jones oversees the Albany Black and Latino Achievers Program at the Capital District YMCA.
Just imagine the positive changes we can make when reaching our young people early on. Like Pedro said in the African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. And through my Brothers and Sisters Keeper initiative, we can and we will make a difference. So I challenge you all to tell your friends and your family, encourage them to get involved and to become a positive role model in a young person's life.
Funding comes from Community Development Block Grant funds, as well as the Department of Youth and Workforce Services. The program complements the Albany Promise, which works on early childhood education, third and fourth grade English language and math proficiency, and high school success. A town meeting is to be held at the Albany Public Library main branch at 6 p.m. February 4th to discuss ways to move the initiative forward. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York and states around the country marked Martin Luther King Jr. Day with celebrations and remembrances. Habitat for Humanity of Greater Newburgh held its fifth annual MLK Day of Service this week. Volunteers worked on gutting houses while kids were building birdhouses. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there and filed this report.
Some 65 volunteers with Habitat Newburgh worked on four houses on South Miller Street, part of the city's historic district. They braved blustery conditions and a temperature of just 25 degrees. Celeste Bloomer is a house captain who has been volunteering with Habitat for about 16 years.
Today we're cleaning out a house. We're doing major demolition of, this is 24 South Miller. It's going to be a women's build. Getting it ready for a family. We had an asbestos and a lead abatement done already, so that's all out, but what's left are the walls and the ceilings and the doors and the windows, so we're taking it right down to its studs, and then we'll reframe inside.
She says the house will take about a year to complete, and that's working Wednesdays and Saturdays. Bloomer mentioned the house she is working on is a women build project. This means at least 75% of volunteers working on the house are women. This particular house is Habitat Newburgh's seventh house under the International Women Build Program. Kathy Collins is executive director of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Newburgh.
We build homes, community, and hope. And I think that hope sometimes may be one of the best things that we do, because that allows other people to join us in a very different way.
She says the Dr. Martin Luther King Day of Service and the other days Habitat volunteers work show people coming together for the purpose of improving lives and building community.
Community is built both in the building in the end result, but also in the process of that building. I always say that I love that I watch that barriers that so often separate us, which can be age or socioeconomic or race or even political. We don't even know what most people's political bent is here. That by doing this together, that all those barriers fall away. And I think Dr. King would be very proud of what happens on a Habitat site.
She says when Habitat completes a house, it likely will be appraised between $125,000 and $145,000, depending on size. Erica Peichel and Adrian Cepeda are Goshen High School seniors and in the National Honor Society. Here's Cepeda.
I'm always sitting. My parents are always telling me to get off my phone. So, like, it was kind of a good idea to come out and, like, help people. And, like, I want to help people for a living kind of a thing. So, I don't know. It feels good.
Peichel says she also would rather help in this manner than sit around on a day off. And she shares her view of community.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in this community or if you're in Goshen or if you're in Newburgh or if you're in Monroe. What matters is that you're helping all people.
And while the MLK Day of Service is Habitat Newburgh's fifth, it was the first year to involve younger kids, who built birdhouses back in Habitat's Washington Street space. Aiden Grice is a first grader. What will he do with the birdhouse he built and painted?
We're going to give it to the people that are moving in the houses.
And what do you think about not being in school and painting birdhouses for people?
It makes me feel good.
That was second grader Aaron Bellano. David McTemini led the birdhouse building activity. He is a lifelong City of Newburgh resident and has volunteered with Habitat since 1999.
So I've been volunteering for 16 years, and I would like to think that these kids who are starting here today, I hope that 16 years from now, I could come by when I'm 86 years old instead of 70 years old and see that they're still volunteering and working, and now they're building a little bit bigger houses than what we build today. So they're helping. We're building houses, they're building houses. I hope down the line they can help us build more houses in Newburgh.
Reporting from Newburgh, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1604. Or just listen on the web at wimc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.